Hi, and thanks so much for tuning in today. We normally used to do this on a live phone call, but it's so hard. You know, people's schedules are so busy. And frankly, I have some people who are in Australia, some people who are in Europe, that it's hard for them to call in. So this way, I'm going to put it out there, and whenever and however you can listen to it, it's accessible to you. So this is the vernal equinox call, and we're going to look at things in the sky that are occurring from March 20th, pretty much through the solstice time, which is June 20th. So let's step back a bit and you know, remember how we got here. This is in the northern hemispheres, referred to as the vernal or the spring equinox, March 20th. In the southern, if you're below the equator, then this is actually your autumnal equinox. Okay, so why is this happening? Well, we have to thank probably a bunch of asteroids. The current thinking is that billions of years ago, after the Big Bang, and as things were forming and there was a lot of activity in the skies, that the Earth was whopped on by a bunch of asteroids, either one big Chuchamunga asteroid or several bombardments of asteroids that knocked us, literally. So remember, in grammar school, you learn that we spin on our axis around the sun and we're tilted. The Earth is tilted on its axis. Well, it's that tilt that we have to thank for giving us seasons. Because if we were straight up and down, it would always be cold where it's cold. It's always be hot where it's hot. There would be very little shift in seasons. And, you know, that would be, I would think, rather boring. But because we were whopped and we tilt, then we get this change of weather, which I'm, as I said, pretty grateful for. So how does this happen? Well, as we're going around the sun and we're tilting, there's a point where we shift and the sun crosses the celestial equator. Now, of course, mostly the crossing is us. We're doing the moving around the sun. But the sun's energy enters the northern part of the equator above. It's not a big shift. It doesn't move much, but it just goes above the equator, to the north of the equator, I should say. And so, of course, that sun energy now is now directed onto the northern part of the planet. So it brings us light, it brings us spring, it brings us the long days of summer. So that's what happens in the north. Of course, what happens in the south is just the opposite, because the sun is tilting away from the southern part below the equator. So you guys down there are going into the winter. Now, the whole concept of the vernal equinox, this spring equinox, really is a northern-based thing, because the sun moves into Aries. When we have solstices and equinoxes, the sun moves into the cardinal signs, the mover, doer, shaker signs. So it's a big shift of energy. So on March 20th, the vernal equinox, the sun shifts in, tilts in to the constellation Aries, first sign of the zodiac. And obviously, as I said, the zodiac, the Western zodiac, was devised by people in the northern hemisphere. So it is a time of renewal, right? The first sign, rebirth. Everything is coming back to life. So the Celts, here's a little tidbit here. The Celts had a goddess. Now, depending on the story, because as these things change many, many times, they had a goddess Ostara. It's O-E-S-T-R-T-E-R-E, something like that. And Ostara, you could Google her, was either a young maiden, this idea of the virginal maiden, new, spring newness, who turned herself into a rabbit and went through the countryside bringing flowers and eggs, right? Well, rabbits are rather fertile, right? And eggs are always a sign of rebirth. I remember the first time I went to a Passover dinner, and I'm like, they've got hard-boiled eggs. That's Easter, you know. And the idea of eggs as part of a spring ritual is ancient. And so this Ostara either turned herself into the bunny, and then sometimes you read the mythology, and she just traveled the land with her bunny. But in any case, the idea of newness, virginity, she was a maiden, the fecund rabbit, and eggs and rebirth are all associated around this. And this is where we get the name Easter, Ostara Easter. So to summarize this little why we're in an equinox situation, when the sun makes this shift and is, you know, moving, so it's crossing that celestial equator, we have a equal amount of light and dark. So the days are equal, equinox. So you have 12 hours of sun, 12 hours of dark. And then, of course, that begins to shift. So those of us in the north, it begins to get lighter, lighter, longer, longer, so that by midsummer, depending on where you are, you could have sun until, you know, I grew up sort of in the mid-Atlantic of the United States, 9, 10 o'clock. It can still be rather light. If you go way up above, if you're up in the, you know, the Norway areas, that's why they have sunlight virtually 24 hours a day, the longer into summer you get. So, again, it's all a matter of the shift. Where you guys below the equator, you're turning inward. It's your fall. You're taking stock. We in the north are bursting forward, renewed energy. So that's sort of the 22nd, well, it was a little longer than that, okay. But it was the brief explanation of this whole idea of the equinox, when you have equal time before the sun moves into the north, if you will, and gives the north more and more and more light, sun, whatever. Okay, so what's going on? Well, as I said, the equinox is the 20th of March. And right after that, this year, we have a retrograding Saturn. Saturn is going to be retrograded, because these guys stay retrograded a while, from March 25th through mid-August, like August 15th. So it's a long retrograde. Now, a retrograde is sort of an optical illusion, basically. We're spinning around the sun on the ecliptic, right? The other planets are spinning around the sun on this ecliptic, this sort of semicircular, pear-shaped thing around the sun. And sometimes we look up and we say, gee, that planet looks like it's going backwards. Well, it's not. It's an illusion based on where we are, where they are, where the sun is at that time. To an astrologer, a retrograde is a time to pull in. It's a time to sort of fix what may not be working. It's a time to take the energy of that planet inward, digest it, and say, all right, when it goes straight again, when it gets, you know, normal again, I can use that energy in a much more beneficial way, a much more beneficial manner. So what is the energy of Saturn? Well, I got to tell you, Saturn gets a bum rap. And until I got a really good teacher, I have to tell you that I, too, blamed Saturn for a lot of things, which is not fair. Saturn is sort of the taskmaster of the zodiac. Okay, he's the daddy figure of the zodiac. Where, you know, Jupiter is like the good parent, the fun parent. You know, go out and eat candy and explore and be wild. Saturn is eat your broccoli, you know, make a list, do your homework, organize. So Saturn, and think of Saturn, you know, circled by those rings, Saturn gets kind of a really bum rap sometimes about the responsibility that he places on us. And that's sad. Because remember, without Saturn, we would have anarchy. Without Saturn, we'd have no bones. I mean, he controls the bones, the structure of the body, the skin, what keeps us strong. He's our infrastructure. So yes, he can make us work hard, but you know, what comes at the end of good hard work is often a lot of rewards. So, you know, thank you, Saturn. Now, when this organizing, this responsibility, this duty energy goes into retrograde, what we need to be doing is assessing where we may be falling down a bit on the job. And I'm going to go through the houses quickly and sort of pinpoint the energy of Saturn and how it may affect the houses. And again, you would need to know where it is transiting in your chart and also where it is by birth in your chart. Because where Saturn is by birth, you know, you have to overcome this fear of not being good enough, this fear of not accomplishing enough. You know, Saturn, I always say, when you want a description of Saturn, he makes us should all over ourselves. Saturn to the extreme. I'm not good enough. I'm not organized. I'm not this. I'm not that. But Saturn, you know, again, makes us assess, maybe we need to do something a little bit differently. So this is a good time to do a lot of personal assessment about where you can add a little more responsibility, a little more duty, a little more adult. You know, there's that funny little meme that's on Facebook. Oh, I don't want to adult today. Don't make me adult. Well, Saturn makes you adult, unfortunately. So Saturn in the first house. Now, if you have Saturn natally in your first house by birth, you do have to watch for depression. And when Saturn goes through, if Saturn is in retrograde going through your first house, be very careful that you're not doing the, geez, I suck, you know, to the degree that it could cause a depressive energy. That's the one thing you have to watch about Saturn, because the first house is the house of personality, right? And so when you have that, you know, work harder, do your homework, you know, all that kind of, you know, form and structure energy, you know, it can bring you down. So watch if Saturn's in the first house. The good way to respond to a retrograde Saturn in the first house is to take stock of my life, my personality, my body. Do I really need to go to the gym? Come on, I've been saying for 6 months, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to get more toned, I'm going to walk more, I'm going to do something healthy for my body. It could resonate with your personality. I really have got to find a way to stop making so-and-so trigger me. Okay, that's another way that you can manifest that energy in the first house. Second house, get a hold of your money. Okay, it's here in the States, it's tax season coming up. If it's March 20th, you're a few weeks away. Are you one of those people that file 10,000 extensions and still doesn't get it done on time? Is your budget a mess? Do you have too much stuff? Are you someone who just has to have all this stuff around you? Clean out your closets. It's spring. Saturn in the second is saying do this, you know, get this stuff in order. Third house is siblings, community, lateral relationships. Do you owe somebody a phone call? Do you need to call your sisters? Do you need to set things right with your family? So, for instance, is the form, the structure, the order of your family, are they dumping too much on you? Are you not taking your fair share of responsibility? You know, this is a time, go inward and be honest with yourself. Is it really time for you to join the community watch program because you've been saying, geez, I've got to give something back to my community. I never do it, blah, blah, blah. This is the time to sign up, to do that, to take responsibility, because that's the big thing that Saturn is demanding. Now, Saturn in the fourth can be your actual family. I'm going to finally get my kids to do their homework on time or clean their rooms. I'm going to put something in place here. It could be, I'm going to fix the roof. It's your actual home. It could be, you know, my mother, even though she's getting older, is being a real pain in the neck, demanding too much. Or, geez, I got to call my mother, okay? The fourth house on a very rudimentary basis is, who am I when the mask is pulled away, right? Who am I at my core? It's the house of the mother, of the actual birth of who you are. You know, so do I need to take off the masks and do some serious self-reassessing? Fourth house. Fifth house also can vibrate to children. Again, I'm going to, you know, have them clean their rooms. We're going to have a family, you know, get rid of the crap, a session, whatever. It's also your personal creativity. So, you know, I just know I could cook like James Beard if, you know, but geez, I guess I better first have to learn how to crack an egg. Well, you could keep wandering around saying, yeah, I could do that. I could knit that. I can do that. Well, now it's the time to go take the egg cracking class, the knitting class, you know, that sort of thing. Take your creative dreams, and what do you have to do to manifest them? Saturn in the fifth, right? Reassessment. Don't act on it. Plan it, and then act on it later. You've got all the way till August, till it goes out of retrograde. Sixth house is your health, all right? Again, I should go get that test. I should go see my doctor. I should lose the 50 pounds that they've been telling me to do. It's also vibrant to how you feed, work, and care for the body. So my office is a mess. I got to move, you know, my office. I need to switch to it. It's not switching careers, but I really hate this job. I hate this boss. I hate this job. I like what I do, but I hate this company. So I'm going to make a plan to get the heck out of Dodge. You know, that's the kind of thing Saturn in the sixth brings about. Saturn in the seventh can be tricky because the seventh is interpersonal relationships. It's marriage. It's business contracts. This is the time where you might have to fire that client. You know, we've all had those clients that just suck time, suck energy, and bring you Zippo money. That's the kind of thing. It could also be the time where you have to say, okay, dear husband, we had a plan. You know, I do the laundry on even number weeks. You do the laundry on odd number weeks, you know, or whatever. And I've been noticing that, you know, the third week of the month, the laundry is never done. You're not holding up your end of the bargain. Or maybe you concede to them that you're not holding up the end of the bargain. But it's that kind of restructuring of interpersonal relationships. Saturn in the eighth can be tricky. The eighth house is always tricky because it's death, dying, rebirth, money, other people's money. Are there inheritance issues that have to come up? Are there, and you know, end-of-life discussions that you have to have with people? You know, hey, you have to have a will. You have to have this in order. You know, that kind of stuff. It's also a time, because the eighth house at its core is death of the personality, you know, dying to the old self and coming up a new person. You know, what do I have to do to be that person I always wanted to be? You know, I have a thing going, and I have a friend who teases me about it, but I'm figuring out who I want to be in my next life, and I'm putting it out in the universe. I've got 60 qualities. And some of them are qualities I have now that I don't want to lose. And some of them are like, no, I want to be like that. And I've made up little flashcards. You know? And every day I draw one. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to work on that. So I figure if I work on it now, I'll have it mastered the next time I come around. And it's making me the person I want to be. That's very Saturn in the eighth house. Okay. Now, Saturn in the ninth house, do I need to go back to school? Do I need to, you know, I've always said I'm going to sit down and read the books on, I don't know, some spiritual guru. I'm going to take a course. I'm going to travel. I've always wanted to see, I don't know, the White Cliffs of Dover before I die. All right, what do I need to do? I need to get my money. I need to get my vacation time. you know, I need to do that. I always said I'm going to publish a book. You know, what do I have to do to finally publish that book? You know, lay the plans. Figure it out. 10th house is your career. So we're in the 6th house. You might say, I love my job. I just hate my boss. Or I hate this company. The 10th house might be, yeah, maybe I want to retire in 10 years. What do I have to do to retire in 10 years or 5 years? Or what do I have to do to, you know, I don't want to be doing this. You know, I read a story about someone who in their 20s was riding a plane home and sitting next to a guy who was like in his 50s going, oh, I hate this job. I hate this job. I only got, you know, 20 years to retire or whatever. I guess the guy was in his 40s. And this guy was like, wow, if I don't like what I'm doing right now, and if I have to spend the next 40 years waiting to retire, hating what I do, I got to get out of this. And I'm going to shift my job, my career. You know, that's the 10th house. Or it could be, how do I, you know, relate more to society? How do I get involved more? How do I get that pat on the back, that approval from society? The 11th house is your tribe, your buddies. I can find these people who have like-minded interests, and I can work together. So, you know, I've been sitting home too much. I'm really interested in, I don't know, saving baby dolphins in the Antarctic. I know there's no dolphins in the Antarctic. I'm going to go find a group that saves baby dolphins in the Antarctic. I'm going to find like-minded people. I want to join a book club. I want to join a knitting club. I want to join a travel club. I want to find people who think like me. You know, this year is an election year, as if we don't know, in the United States. And I'm going to find people who think like that, you know, and vote for that, work for that person. That's the kind of energy that the 11th house, like-minded people who have a similar way of connecting, of thinking. My tribe, my buddies. Not your friends that you go drinking with. You know, these are the friends that you band together. And Saturn in the 12th is a very spiritual time because the 12th house is where we connect to God, right? So I'm going to meditate. I always said I'm going to meditate an hour a day. Well, I guess some people meditate an hour a day. I don't have the patience for it. But, you know, I'm going to start this meditation program. I'm going to start doing this, this, and this. I'm going to, you know, read Deepak Chopra. I'm going to, you know, whatever. I'm going to somehow enhance my spiritual connection, my compassion, my empathy for man. So, again, know where your Saturn is, or know just where you're feeling this pull to be more responsible, to be an adult, and work with Saturn with this energetic, because it's retrograded, it's asking you to go within, it's asking you to make a plan. So when it bursts forth out of retrograde in August, you're ready to implement it. You're ready to go. Now, we have another very interesting retrograde, and it's a planet that doesn't retrograde often. The closer in ones don't retrograde that often. And Mars is going to be retrograde. It retrogrades on April 17th, and it's actually in Sagittarius at the time of its retrograde. And then it retrogrades all the way back so that on May 28th, it retrogrades back into Scorpio. And then when it finally goes direct again on June 29th, so right after the solstice, it will still be at 23 degrees Scorpio. So it's moving into back into Scorpio. Now, this is very interesting. Mars retrogrades are interesting because of the Mars energy, which is the energy of Aries, which is the energy of forward movement. Mars, Aries, in astrology, is your masculine component to the nth degree. you know, and the spectrum of Aries is someone who is a very good leader, who takes charge in situations, you know, who handles things, who knows their boundaries, who has a good sense of personal limits, who says, look, this is my goal, I'm going to follow it, I have this intention, you're not going to stop me, I'm going to overcome, I'm going to drive, I'm going to succeed. It can run from that to the bully down the street. You know, Aries on the far worst spectrum, Aries in overdrive, is I do it my way. You don't talk to me. You don't, you know, fight back. You don't discuss it with me. I'm the ruler. It's like Genghis Khan, you know, on steroids. So you run the spectrum. And someone with, you know, really screwed up Mars, really screwed up Aries energy is self-centered, demanding. You know, think of the worst male stereotype you can think of. You know, I do it my way. My freedom is important. You stay home and, you know, cook the food kind of, you know, caveman kind of mentality. The other interesting thing about Mars and this retrograde particularly is it's retrograding back into Scorpio. Now, in the days before Pluto was discovered, which was like 1920, Mars ruled Scorpio because they didn't have a ruler. So like right now, we have Venus ruling both Taurus and Libra. Well, Mars did double duty. Mars ruled Aries and Scorpio. So it's an ancient rulership. Mars in Scorpio is a fiery time, right? Scorpio is a fixed sign. It's a sign of determination. It deals with death, dying, and rebirth. It vibrates to the eighth house. It's about secrets. It's about inward action. And it's, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, then triple the fury of a Scorpio woman scorned. You know, there's a very strong, you know, revengeful energy of Scorpio. So this is a tricky retrograde. It's a tricky retrograde in the world because Mars is going to dance with Uranus. We already see a lot of goofy energy in this country of vengeance, of xenophobia, of, you know, being mean and insulting and vicious on a national scale. This is going to get even uglier. Okay, now, for us, when Mars goes retrograde, your Mars energy is anger. Anger is not always a bad energy, right? If you're angry, you change something that is not good. So, you know, don't always take anger as a bad thing. But it is self-direction, right? It is anger. It is, I'm going to conquer. I'm going to overcome. When it is retrograded, it is a good time to say, okay, what ticks me off, right? A retrograde is an inward time, right? We have to go inside ourselves and find what makes us tick. That's a retrograde in general. So what makes me angry, right? Who is just pissing me off? And what can I do instead of sitting here and lashing out? Am I a lasher outer? Does that get anywhere? Or am I a stewer? Am I just sitting here going, oh, some person just ticks me off so much, I'm going to punch them someday. Ooh, if I could just, you know, that kind of gnarly energy. How do you address your anger? Do you lash? Do you pout? Does it eat you up? Or do you express it, say your piece peacefully, move on? If something angers you, do you, you know, make steps to correct it? So from April 17th to May 28th, it is a good time to reassess your connection to your anger response. Are you finding yourself angry over and over and over again about the same things? Is there a resolution? Do you just, again, make it eat at you? You know, how can you make that energy come out in a beneficial way? And with the Scorpio energy, right? Scorpio, remember, is internal seething and it's vengefulness. So you know, be honest with yourself. Is vengeance always the way? Probably not. Is there a way that you can peacefully sort of release that vengeful energy into something productive? Can you get rid of it in a beneficial manner, as opposed to an angry manner? Sorry. So these are the things that you kind of have to go through. What, you know, is there someone that you really have been avoiding because you don't want to have to deal with the anger issue? Do you don't want to have to go into the work, the effort, the whatever of it all? Is there something that needs to be done in terms of how you, are you the one that everybody beats up? Are you the punching bag? You know? How does that make you feel? Internalize it. Carry it with you. Now, Mars is a pretty fast mover, so through that time, he'll probably chug, even though he's going backwards, he'll chug through some, you know, different houses. But go through what I said about Saturn. I kind of pinpointed what each of the houses deals with. You know, and if Mars is there, that's the anger issue. Am I angry at my boss, at my siblings, at myself, okay? At my spouse, at my kids, at my social setting, at my house where I live. Am I not happy where I'm? These are the types of things that you need to go into. Remember, of course, Jupiter is still in retrograde and will be retrograded till May 9th. That energy, and we talked about this on the last call, so if you want to review that, the last call is up on the website now. If you can't find it, let me know. But go, you know, review that energy, because there's nothing better to do than have an energy of, you know, that internal time to get things clear. Now, on March 23rd, there will be a lunar eclipse. It'll be a Libra-Aries eclipse, because the sun will have moved into Aries. And in order to have an eclipse, the moon has to be full, which means it's 180 degrees as far away from the sun as it can get. That's the only time the poor moon can be seen in its fullness, because the sun's not blocking it. So you have this energy of an eclipse. Now, a lunar eclipse is a very good time to reassess our energy as it pertains to those things, again, that are nagging. Somebody once said that eclipses are like the wild card, and the universe uses them to get us up to say, hey, this needs to be changed. Why? Because the moon is passing between the Earth and the Sun in such a way that it eclipses it. It finally gets its attention. The poor little moon, I mean, it's kind of neglected floating around out there. It kind of feels bad anyway. It was part of Earth and was chopped off by another asteroid bombardment. So it's like, hey, I'm out here. I used to be part of you, and you can't see me when the sun is screwing me up, but the moon doesn't get a lot of respect. So eclipse time is a surprise time, a shake-up time. People who were born during the lunar eclipse, you know, are people who like to spice things up, for good or for bad. You know, sometimes they're just annoying little pranksters who just like to interrupt life, and sometimes they're people who make some change. So the eclipse, and again, you need to know where it is in your specific chart, but we have it on the me to we axis, right? Aries, as I described before, is that masculine energy. It is drive. It is direction. It's leadership, okay? That's good. It also can be self-centeredness, demandingness, one-sidedness when it's taken to the other extreme. Libra, the opposite sign, is the we sign. Libra at its best is diplomatic. It's socializer. It's the entertainer. It's the person who brings people together, loves the interaction and the exchange. It loves to make people feel, you know, like they're part of something. It's the mediator, the diplomat. It's the scales, right? It's the only sign not symbolized by a humanoid or an animal. It's the sign of the scales. And it wants that balance. It wants, you know, so a Libra, in its perfect sense, is a balanced energy. Oh, come on, join the party. Don't be left out. You know, here, let's mediate. Don't fight, let's mediate. Libra, you know, on steroids, is codependent, meddling, doesn't know who they are. You know, I always say, tell me who I am, you know, and I don't know who I am unless you tell me. Define me. It's defined by others. It's defined by an outward source. You know, there's no sense of me. Where Aries can be all me, Libra can be all we. So during this time of shakeup, where are you on the Aries Libra? You know, are you too codependent? Are you too self-centric? Can you give? Can you take? This is a very good time to analyze this type of energy. And again, this eclipse comes right after the equinox. It's March 23rd. So it's a very important time to do that, to assess that me to we access. On May 21st, we will have a full moon, and that's a very good time to bring forth the things that you want to manifest. You sort of manifest them on the new moon, that this is what I want, and then you bring them to fruition on the full moon. So in May, new moon is May 6th, and the full moon is May 21st. Now, the reason why this is so cool is May 21st is the day when the sun shifts from Gemini to Taurus. So we're having a full moon on this kind of shifting day. So it's going to depend on where you live and when this shift takes place, whether it's a full moon on a Gemini Sag axis or the Taurus Scorpio axis. But it's a good time to realign all those energies. So if you need to manifest something on the Gemini Gemini Sag access, manifest something for that, ask for that manifestation on May 6th. If you want to manifest something on the Taurus Scorpio access, ask for that on May 6th. So what should you ask for? The Gemini Sag access is an access of information. Gemini wants to just accumulate as much information as possible. Gemini likes, you know, constant movement and excitement and you know, I'm going to read the first chapter, the last chapter, let me keep moving, I'm very bored with energy, okay? Sag is, I'm going to study. I'm going to take in information and study it in a very deep way and get to know, because my idea of Sag is to research and to know something inside and out. I don't ever want to not know anything. I want to be the smartest kid on the block. So where Gemini takes information as, okay, let me pass this along to you, and bing, 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 Sag is like, I will accumulate this energy, and I will take it in. So do you need to balance that energy? Do you spend too much time on something? Are you afraid of learning something new? Are you too stuck in that Sag energy? Okay, the same time with Gemini, are you not sitting down and processing and feeling into the information? I come from a Gemini South Node, meaning I was Gemini in my past life. So believe me, I understand Gemini like nobody's business. I know the nervousness of Gemini. I know the need to get more information, the need to, you know, I'm always giving magazines to people after I read them. I can't stand that knowledge to wind up in the recycling bin. So I understand this. So if you need to balance the knowledge, Gemini Sag, too much, too little, I'm afraid to learn, I'm afraid of being stupid, Sag, and then, you know, push yourself into something new, Or if you're Gemini and you're just sort of bing, 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 bing all around with your information and say, you know, I'm going to take that 800-page book, damn it, and I'm going to read it for once. So if that's the balance you need, then ask for that manifestation on May 6th when the moon is new and work on it when the moon is full. Ask for the fruition on the full moon. That's when you put that into action. If you prefer to work on the Taurus-Scorpio axis, okay, then this is what you need to think about. So is your Taurus-Scorpio axis in balance? Taurus is physicality. Taurus is the bull, right? Taurus is good food and fine wine and a nice home and pretty comfortable clothes. Sounds pretty good. Taurus, you know, on steroids, Taurus taken way over to the other side of things is Epicureanism. I'm going to eat and drink everything I can get my hands on. I don't care about weight. I'm going to be, you know, this big rotund person shoving food in my face. I'm going to collect stuff because I'm Taurus and I need stuff around me to feel safe. I may even have hoarder tendencies. I'm very stubborn. And I don't want to hear your side of things. Thank you very much. That's the bad part of Taurus. The good part of Taurus is, again, someone who appreciates life, who will take a walk in nature, who can take a peach, the first peach of summer, and really enjoy it. You know, they're tactile and they're warm. If your Taurus is out of whack, you know, then you might want to work on this full moon, new moon thing into your Taurus Scorpio side. Scorpio is very internal, very spiritual. Scorpio is, unlike Taurus, which is of the earth, they're of spirit. There's a curiosity, a seeking energy, an energy to go deep inside who you are and figure out what makes you tick and what's your place in the universe. So it's all about spirit. Scorpio can also be very vengeful. Scorpio is the only sign, because of its transformative energy, that can either manifest great things. Scorpions, if you have Scorpio sun, Scorpio rising, Scorpio nodal axis, you never leave the earth the same person you were when you came in. A lot of people stay just the way they are, right? Scorpio can transform. They could rise like a spiritual eagle, but they could also devolve into a vengeful, you know, the Scorpio will bite its tail off, just spinning around and around and around, and, you know, this vengeful circle. So if you need to balance spirit and stuff, if you need to balance, you know, I only care about, you know, the universe and mysteries, and I don't really care about nature, then you're too much in the Scorp. You know, if you're too much into vengeance and all that stuff, you're too much into Scorp. So this is a very interesting time in May where you sort of have a pick, because of the shifting, you have a pick. Which of those axes do you want to work on? And remember, when the moon is full, when the moon is new, which is May 6th, that's when you say, okay, my intentions are, you make your intentions on the new moon. And then by the time it becomes full, you work on the way to manifest it. So you get rid of the negatives of what you're trying to balance and you move further into a more positive stance on how you want to go forward. So it's a neat time that we have a double axis there. In April, the new moon is April 7th. And the moon becomes full on April 22nd. So again, this is a very, again, this Aries-Libra thing. So if you haven't had enough of the Aries-Libra battle, you will be able to do it again in April. So you don't have the duality that you have in May. So there is a lot of fun things coming up in the sky. If you have any specific questions, you know how to reach me. I wish you all a happy equinox, whether it's vernal or autumnal, depending on where you are in the world. and to really enjoy that cardinal energy, the sun moving into a cardinal sign. Take care, and I hope to hear from you soon. Bye-bye.